Hi, and welcome to the Woman Chat Wednesday podcast, powered by Compass.
Welcome, everyone. This is officially our first ever podcast for Women Chat Wednesday, which is crazy that we're actually doing a podcast. We kind of, I think Laura and I really manifested this, talking about it last year and then getting to where we are. But just a little intro. My name is Amanda Hershey, and I am a marketing advisor in the Compass Boston office. And my co-host is Laura Alba. And Laura, you can give a little intro.
Thank you, Amanda. Hello, everyone. Just like Amanda said, my name is Laura Alba, and I'm really excited to finally be doing this. I love podcasts, and the fact that we're jumping in and doing our own is really a dream come true. And we are, you know, starting this journey today with one of our greatest speakers. She's in the DEI community affinity group, and we're so excited to introduce her, Joydy Taylor, our first episode, and we're excited to have her here.
Welcome, Joydy. Thank you for joining us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited, and Women Chat Wednesdays are one of my favorite sort of activities that we do at Compass, so I'm really excited that you guys are kind of taking it to the next level.
Yeah, I think we wanted to be able to make this as successful as possible for both our staff community and our agent community. And, you know, as we continue to grow, people are in different time zones. And so we thought having a podcast would make it a little bit easier for people to listen to when they wanted to and wouldn't really miss out if, you know, something was scheduled when they had a meeting or whatnot. But what we're so excited about is we thought that with, you know, Juneteenth coming up and the fact that this is officially the second year that it's a federal holiday, we really wanted to create this opportunity to bring in one of, truly, I would say, you are just such a force, Joydy, within the Compass community and just DEI as a whole. So we thought it was really important that we highlighted a strong Black figure, female figure for our first official episode. So I think we can kind of just jump in here. And if you could just give us a little bit of background on yourself and, you know, how you wound up at Compass.
So I started off at Compass almost 2 years ago. So if you think about the timing, it was August of 2020. So it was really a critical time for D&I at a lot of organizations. And oftentimes the first people stepping into this role is the first time stepping into a D&I practice. Most organizations traditionally didn't have a D&I practice. But before that, for more context, I actually grew up in Massachusetts. So I think that also started to form my identity politics at a really young age. My family is Jamaican. And so I am an immigrant, plus a Black woman, and then also living in New England, which it is pretty homogenous in a lot of ways, and going to prep school and all of those things. And so from a really young age, I didn't have the opportunity to be sort of agnostic about gender or race. And so I think, I mean, it was just like very obvious. I grew up in like South Shore, Massachusetts. Everyone was blonde and blue eyes, which being a Black woman, it was very, from a like phenotypical standpoint, you were different from a very, very young age. And so you had to sort of think about the ways in which, how can you relate to people that are different from you? And also how can you still, you know, being a child of an immigrant, and we ate different foods and my parents had accents and things like that, there are also some immutable parts of my identity that even as much as you want to assimilate, you can't. And so from there, I went off to college in Chicago. And that's when I really started to like build the language to be able to talk about race. There was, of course, African-American studies classes. And then I also just had Black friends for the first time. And I think that also helped form and continue to shape, you know, my identity in a new way, in a new light. And then, you know, continuing to have like a diverse set of friends was also incredibly helpful. And then after college, I moved to Minneapolis and I was a business analyst for Target for a while. And that was another experience of living in a somewhat homogenous city, but still being able to sort of understand and how to relate to different people from different backgrounds and really see the beauty and diversity from that perspective. And then from there, I moved to, well, to be honest with you, I almost got fired from Target, but I quit before I was fired because I was so bad at my job. So I quit, but you know, like, where it was just technically before the actual notice went out.
Ahead of the curve.
Ahead of the curve. I was like, y'all are not going to embarrass me. So I was like, let me quit first. So I quit. And I was also so young. And I think that was another thing that really shaped me was I just didn't have anyone to tell me things. My parents are entrepreneurs and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. But, you know, even though I didn't grow up necessarily like underprivileged, I had resources growing up. There also was just this navigation system that I didn't have, like regardless of class, et cetera. I remember I would come to the office and I thought work was literally 9 to 5. And so I would come to the office at 9 and I would leave at 5. And I didn't pick up on the fact that people were coming in at 8 or 8:15. I was actually really late when I came into the office. I just saw on TV that people came into the office at 9 and left at 5. And so I said, well, that's what I'm going to do. And so when you don't have people to sort of like tell you or have this framework, mm-hmm. And once again, my dad didn't have a traditional like go into the office job. I just didn't know better. So that also sort of created, I think all of that is the backstory to how I got into D&I work. But anyways, I left Target and I was the only woman of color on that team as well. And that was also sort of an isolating experience, but moved back home and ended up getting a job at a nonprofit in New York. And that was sort of when I moved to New York. And that nonprofit is called Sponsors for Educational Opportunity, which helped Black, Latinx, and Indigenous folks get into competitive industries. So banking, I had worked in banking when I was an undergrad, banking and private equity, et cetera. Now sort of full circle, Compass partners with this organization that I worked at to help bring in summer interns. But I worked at Google for almost the nonprofit. I worked there for about 2 years and then I pivoted to Google for almost 5 years where I was doing D&I work. Loved the work there too. Both of those experiences were really amazing. The only reason I sort of left Google was that I could see a ceiling. Google was so resourced that I didn't really have the opportunity to get a breadth of D&I work there. We had so many people in a D&I space that someone would focus on recruiting, someone else was focused on retention, someone else was focused on creating an inclusive culture that I couldn't really build a full D&I, toolkit there. So I knew I wanted to go to a smaller company where I could lead D&I. And I just had started, I was just open to looking. And then really briefly after even sort of sensing that I needed something new, a recruiter reached out about Compass. And I was able to sort of negotiate and advocate to step into a leadership role here as well. And that is how I got into Compass about 2 years ago. And it's been really exciting and really awesome. And once again, I think everyone who started in D&I, especially in 2020, where a lot of these jobs opened up, it's been really complex and really challenging. And then also holding space for building a D&I practice, but you're also experiencing a lot of the current events or external affairs yourself as a person, but then also having to show up and advocate for other communities has been a duality that I don't think a lot of people always expect to do in their workplace. But nonetheless, I'm really excited about the progress and the work that Compass has done and also how much work there is to do, particularly being a real estate company in the housing industry.
Yeah, especially within like the D&I space, because with like redlining and everything, you know, I think it is so important that we do have that focus because I think it's the best way that we'll be able to really make an impact and mm-hmm. help shape the people that are our clients go out into the world and be armed with that information so that they're helping get rid of those types of practices and really, you know, fulfill Robert's mission of helping everybody find a place in the world, which I think is so important. And this is why I love having these conversations because not only are you a Black woman and an immigrant, Laura is an immigrant and I am mm-hmm. a Black and Jewish woman. So the intersectionality here, I think, is just like it's so great. And I think a lot of what you were saying really rang true for me and I'm sure for you too, Laura. For me, it's so interesting as you were kind of talking about your upbringing was so different from my upbringing, you know, as someone of mixed heritage, you know, and I do have, you know, I have much lighter skin. So I would always get the, what are you question. Mm-hmm. And I think too, you know, with my, I didn't really honestly start thinking about like what it meant to be a Black woman until a couple years ago. And I think it's because no one who was mixed ever talked about it. Mm-hmm. And it was just very like, it was almost like a secret. And I had this like conversation with my parents and they said, you know, we never talked about it because we had this idealistic view that like you wouldn't have to think about it. You wouldn't have to talk about it, but it kind of leaves you in like as a child in a very like limbo space. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, it was always like being a woman first and like now being able to like step into. And I think like to your point, New England is a very homogenous place. And there's a lot of instances here where, you know, my skin color enters the room first and I go around and there's no one there that looks like me. So the fact that we even have a DEI program and like that's a focus, I think is reassuring because I want to make sure that our space looks like, you know, is inclusive and I'm not the only person of color in the room. And I think it's just been, for me, it's been the journey of finding my voice and the fact that we have so many affinity groups here at Compass has really helped. And even that we're just having this conversation here, I think that's so great. And I know Laura and I had a conversation about her journey and it's so funny that, because you made a reference about seeing things on TV. Laura had the same thing when she talked about, and I'll let her share that story, but it was just so funny hearing your story and like seeing things reflected in like my upbringing as well.
Definitely. I think following to Amanda said, just having the space to be able to have these conversations. I mean, I am an immigrant. I'm from Colombia. And I couldn't resonate more with everything that you talk about, Jordi, about moving to different places. I read a few days ago something about like buying tickets to travel is the most expensive. It's like what really truly makes you rich. But I think being able to experience other cultures and moving around and realizing that there's so many different people out in the world is what truly builds up on who you are and what really enriches your own life. And, you know, as an immigrant, for one, when I moved here, I think I've been educated in a way that I realize of the different cultures that are out there. To me, I don't know if this is good or bad, but to me, everyone was always, you know, people. Everyone is just people to me. I never really saw the difference in color or the difference in races, other than, you know, they just think different. But we're just the same. But I do like that these conversations are being had because then I have awareness of their backgrounds and where they're coming from. And so there is more empathy on any topic that we touch because you have that awareness from the different backgrounds and the different cultures. And I'm so happy. And I feel like, honestly, I know we're going through a lot of different changes and a lot of different dynamics and kind of, you know, hard situations in the world. But at the same time, I do think that this is the best time to be alive because we are having these conversations. We have a company that advocates for, you know, affinity groups like yours. And the fact that we have leaders like you that we can look up to and feel like we're in a safe space. Again, I'm super excited to be here and just continue. So we'll continue having the conversation, but so many things to relate on. And I think I'll touch on how like the TV that Amanda was telling in a little bit later.
So I think one of the questions I did want to ask you was just, you know, as a Black woman in corporate America, but also more importantly for relevance, a Black woman at Compass and as head of diversity, how do you kind of see your role and like how has your experience just being in corporate America as a woman of color, like how's that kind of shaped you and how do you look to make space for more people of color in position, like leadership roles across the country and in the company?
One, imposter syndrome is really heightened for me.
Same.
it's really challenging. And I realized I didn't have a ton of imposter syndrome. Even when I went to Google, even though it felt like, oh my gosh, Google, amazing. But I think because the imposter syndrome really heightened when I took a leadership role. At Google, I was an individual contributor. I wasn't necessarily managing a team or formally managing a team. So I knew I could do good work. And I think, you know, as a child of an immigrant, I think we believe deeply around like meritocracy and like do well and you'll succeed and like just the power of like doing work. And so I knew that I could do work well, and I knew that I was smart and capable, and I knew that I thought I had like intelligent thoughts and things to offer. But I think what really tripped me up was like the ownership of space and taking up space. And I think that was sort of the logic leap that was really hard for me, was moving from, I know I'm smart, I know I'm capable, but I don't have to like lead a meeting, or I don't have to push back with people who are more senior to me, or I'm not the person, but I can contribute and I know I'm smart. So then coming to Compass, where I am a Black woman, and I think Compass is really great around having like a diversity of folks in leadership, I would say more than most organizations. I think I saw a statistic where more than half of our people leaders are women. So I will say Compass
makes... That's huge.
Which is amazing. I don't know a ton of companies that can fundamentally say the majority mm-hmm. of the people leaders are women. Mm-hmm. So I think that is helpful and really helps. And I will also say a lot of folks at Compass are also on the younger side, which I think also helps. A lot of the leaders, I would say, are on the younger side, which I think that's a testament to Robert and Robert being a younger leader. And then a lot of the folks that I see on some of these calls are just, you know, my peers. I mean, Rob Lehman graduated like a year or two before me. And I was like, wow, this is inspiring.
I think he's younger than I am.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, which I think makes me feel like, okay. So I had imposter syndrome, of course, around being a Black woman and then also being a younger Black woman when I stepped into this role. And I think we have this arcane view of leadership of like, it looks like this and it sounds like this. And I was not that. Mm-hmm. I'm also not a really aggressive, forceful person. And so when you see like the culture of like cutting people off or being really loud to get your point across, or like being comfortable in like contentious banter in order to like move something forward, that's just not my natural archetype. And so being a woman, being Black, being young, and then also being, I think, a little bit more empathy driven than the archetype that we usually see, created a lot of imposter syndrome in me, where I don't like cutting people off and I don't like delegating in like a very forceful way. I like the collaborative spirit. I like hearing what people have to say. I like leading with empathy and like really asking if my people are okay. So that made it really challenging for me to really step into who I was as a leader. And so what I would offer, and just like taking up space and like asking for things. I remember one time I had a career coach and she asked me, like, what are your needs in your job? And I was like, I can have needs. Like, I thought I was just supposed to produce and like, that's it. But recognizing that it's a transaction, like you are required to produce a certain way. And you also have requirements in order to keep you feeling safe and healthy and supported in a role. And so viewing it, one, I think de-pedestalizing like my job and my title has been helpful, and seeing that this is something that I've earned and worked hard to get. And I think it's really practice. I think I really practice like, okay, you're going to start leading meetings this way. And never something that felt inauthentic to me, but something that just said, okay, you don't have to wait for someone else to kick off the meeting. Like, this is your meeting. You can kick it off. Or like, you don't have to wait for your manager to say, this is okay. Like, you can bring this. Yeah. And if he says no, you can also say, well, why? And Laura, I don't know if you can relate as well. Children of immigrants, it's very authoritarian and like, your mom says something and you do it. There's no talk back. Mm-hmm. There's no conversation around it. It is like, okay, you do this. And so I also had that ingrained in me as well of like, if someone in authority says something, you know, you respect that and you do as they say, and there's no pushback. So I think all of those factors were in the back of my mind. So that's a lot of baggage to walk into a leadership role with. And through leadership coaches and doing great work and having a great team to support me, and also realizing like your worthiness in a role and that you earned it and you're worthy of taking up space in that role, and really conquering your imposter syndrome by reminding yourself of the good that you're doing, by having people around you who can affirm you, by trying something incrementally different from what you normally do and actually like getting a good response or piece of feedback from that. Those sorts of things helped me conquer my imposter syndrome. So to answer your question more directly, I guess, being a Black woman in corporate America, being a woman of color in corporate America can be really taxing because you walk in with a lot of baggage and also a lot of signals that you don't belong. Like you might be the only one. And mm-hmm. the reality is people may speak to you differently. And the reality is people may have affronts that trigger that baggage in a way that maybe it wouldn't trigger someone else. And all of those things are reality. But I think the power of representation is incredibly important, and that doesn't exist everywhere. Thankfully, we have that at Compass. But being able to step into your worthiness and authenticity, I never stepped out of who I was in order to be a good leader, I think helped me sort of maintain sanity and grace in this role.
Jerry, I'm going to jump here really quick because it's so interesting that you called it baggage, which we all do. Of course, I think the way we grow up, our backgrounds, our parents, like how we're raised, like it really takes into account when like you're facing corporate America. But I will say the fact that you are here and being a leader in those core values that you learn, you know, like listening to others and respecting and like not having to be the loudest voice in the room to be able to still create impact. To me, that is stronger and speaks louder of somebody than somebody who's just making noise. Yeah. Because sometimes I feel like you need to speak when you have something valuable to mm-hmm. say. Mm-hmm. And stay quiet and listen to what's going on around you and understand. And then sometimes like power move is to keep mm-hmm. silent. I feel like that's so much more smart, so much more stronger than just having to fill up a room yeah. with words that are not valuable. And a true leader is going to sit back and listen to the people they're leading, because yeah. that's how you lead better, by learning from reality and understanding what are the needs of those that you are helping out. And
like added a CEP in there too.
Yes, yes, I love that.
The branding from Compass.
Yes, I love that. I agree. I fully agree. And I think there's something where it's like five levels of leadership. And a lot of people stop at level four, which is like what we traditionally think, someone who's really good at delegating and someone who produces and has results. But that fifth level of leadership is the one in which it's inspirational. Like you don't need the shine. You simply inspire and motivate and allow your reports or your teams to get sort of to their highest level of capacity, productivity, and leadership themselves. And so I really try and remove ego from when I lead and do this work. I have an amazing team member report, Alexis, and I think it's easy for someone to, and we're not super far in age. And so I think it's easy for some leaders to say, okay, in particular meetings, I'm the only person who can speak, but I really value people over any other aspect. And I think that's why I got into this work. And so making sure that we talk constantly around her career development at leading meetings and like allowing her to have that shine, sometimes even in spite of me or whatever I could quote unquote get out of it, I think is really, really important. And I think it also allows others the roadmap to lead authentically themselves. I think mm-hmm. when you are able to still make impact and lead with empathy and lead with kindness and lead with authenticity, I think that allows others the okay to know that they don't have to have this particular archetype in order to be an effective leader. You can still mm-hmm. be maintain true to your core values without having to take on a persona that's not effective to you.
Yeah. And I think that like getting out of our own way and like what I've been doing recently yeah. is because like to your point, as a woman of color, you know, in corporate America, like you're always like, am I the adult in the room? Like should right. someone else like yes. monitor right exactly. now? But I've been trying to do like perception versus reality. Like I could think that I don't have the authority to speak, but like that's my perception. That's not the actual reality. So I think anytime my ego starts creeping in, I'm like, you know what? Are we just, you know, spiraling here or what? And I think the other thing that's so frustrating, and the fact that you specifically spoke to like being an open leader and like coaching. I think in our country, there's always this like, you know, grinding out things like all the time so fast. And the idea that if you're good at your job, the next step is like to be promoted to a manager. But I feel like people always forget that just because you're good at your job doesn't mean you're going to make a good manager. And that's okay.
Right.
Like, or even if you're good at your job and you don't want to be a manager, like that's, it's not a bad thing. You know, it just means that like maybe that's not the best fit for you. And I think the fact that you are aware of that, I think really just speaks volumes, not only of you, but also of the fact that Compass did put you in a position that helps like foster that environment, which I think is so great and so important to remember that, you know, like I said, you can be great at your job and be terrible with people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think it's so important to stay true to that. Because I have been very fortunate of having like very good leaders in my life. My current manager, shout out Victoria, leaders like you, Jordy, and then I don't know, just previous jobs. It really affects how you build up your own career from these managers, and these are people that put themselves there because they're so good. Mm-hmm. I personally. To stay true with myself, I don't think that I'm cut off to be a manager just from the perspective of being managed. just because, you know, like we are always complaining and unsatisfied. So many managers to like get help. And I'm like, you know, bless your soul. I don't know how you do this. I am very passionate about so many other different things. I love marketing. That's like where I want to be. But I need to stay true with myself, and I don't know if I'd be as good of a leader as like the few that I had. And I think by having those realizations and staying true to myself, I'm already making a change by allowing those that are going to lead great to lead and make make an impact in the world. And also to a point, Amanda, that you said about, you know, when you realize that you're the adult in the room and you look around, you're like, okay, wait, I think I'm in charge. I honestly feel like I was 5 years old, like yesterday.
Yeah.
So, it is a little bit of time for you to realize that like you're growing, and you are also creating impact on whatever it is that you do. Yeah. And sometimes, you just find yourself in the room being the one who probably, it's leading somebody or people are looking up to you. But nobody comes to you at a point in your life and tells you like, okay, this is the time where you're an adult.
Right. Right.
And you know more than like everyone, like, you know, you are being able to teach others because we're always, at least I am, like I'm always looking to learn from everyone else and I'm staying curious.
Yeah.
So it is interesting that sometimes you find yourself in those moments. And I think those are going to start happening more and more as we grow and grow. And that's how.
I know. I asked my coworker yesterday after a meeting. I was like, did that make sense? Like, was I making sense?
Yeah.
Which I've been like, you know, I know it does, but then sometimes you're like,
me after every single meeting, like, did I even make sense? But I'm pretty sure that you do. I've been in your meetings, Amanda, and you're great. So
that is so real. I feel like that all, I still was working with a coach and they mentioned like saboteurs, which are basically like these voices in your head that say like, you can't do this, you're not enough this. And one of them was like the little girl saboteur around always feeling like the perpetual child in conversations and in meetings, to your point, because no one is ever like, and now you just go from being treated like a child to then at one point, now I'm supposed to be
running the meeting. Yeah,
exactly. And it's like, wait, but no one told me like being seen.
Yeah.
So I think that is something that I think a lot of people struggle with, to be honest with you. This is not the first, second, or 12th time I've heard this. So I do think a lot of folks struggle with that, particularly if you're doing leadership work at a younger age. Some people say, okay, when you hit 30 something or 40 something, that age sounds like an adult. But when you're still in your 20s or early 30s, it can still feel like, wait, I'm not Right? Yeah. But I do think showing up as a leader in multiple facets of your life also helps for it to bleed into work.
100%.
And so I changed how I started engaging with my friends. If we're planning a trip, like how can I take on a leadership role in that capacity? And when do I need to step back? Of course. But mm-hmm. I think sometimes these attributes, you can't always just turn on in one avenue of your life. It's helpful to have that in other aspects and other cuts of how you talk to your family, how you plan vacations, how you engage with spouses, et cetera. That will also help build the skill set to show up a little bit mm-hmm. more.
And for anyone listening, I will say I had a conversation recently with my now 70-year-old mother, who, by the way, she is a badass, like lead doctor in Philadelphia region. Shout out to Dr. Vaughn. But I asked her, I was like, when did you start feeling like an adult? Was it like when you had kids? And she was like, oh my God, I still don't feel like an adult. So I think it's like you, I think we have this idea in our minds of like what we will feel like when we reach a certain point. And like, you never feel that way. So you never are the adult. Like, sure, there are things that like, I feel like an adult when I have to go pick up my dry cleaning or like boxes. But generally I'm like, wait, is it I'm the adult here?
Right.
So mm-hmm. You're not alone. Anyone else out there that constantly feels like they shouldn't be in charge? You are, and it's okay. But I think, yeah. So
I don't know about you guys, but there's a pivotal moment when I think it's like your 20s when you grow. And there's a specific time when you look at your parents and you realize that they have no clue what they're doing either.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a second. You guys have been lying to me my whole life.
Yeah.
And you're like, you realize that, wow, now they're coming to me. They're coming to me from, okay, how do we do this? And I'm like, but hold on a second. You're in charge.
Right.
Like, as far as I know, you're the parent forever. And I feel like to me, that was grounding. Mm-hmm. Because you start seeing your parents in a more vulnerable way. You always see them as like, you're my rock. I come to you for my issues. You're supposed to give me solutions. And then when you hit that age where now they're coming back to you and they're asking you for advice and they're asking you how to do better things, because obviously we're in our time and things are moving and then things stop being out of their own reach. I think that's very humbling and it really puts you in the front seat really quick. It transitions you when you get those realizations. So if there is a pivotal moment for me as to like adulting, it was that when I realized that my parents are starting to rely on me and I'll say, no, this isn't okay.
So we are running out of time, but I did want to, we used to end all of our actual panels with some fun rapid fire questions.
Oh, we love them. Our favorite section.
Yes, our favorite section. Laura, do you have them pulled up too?
Yes, I do.
Okay, perfect. So we can kind of just ping pong back and forth. So I'll ask one and then Laura, you can go.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. Are you ready, Jody?
I am ready. I don't know if you can hear the cars honking outside. Hopefully.
No.
So
great sound.
All set.
All right. What was the last show you binged?
The Ultimatum.
Oh, okay. That's on my list. I need to watch it.
It's so great. It's like a great case study on like current Western dating.
Okay. Horrifying. I'm in it. It's terrible.
Exactly. It makes you feel better.
Okay, I'll go. What is your celebrity crush?
Oh, I don't know. I wanted to say Michael B. Jordan, but I don't even know if I like him that much. Victor Cruz. I think he's really cute. Do you know who Victor Cruz is? He used to play.
What is he in again?
No, he's playing football.
Oh,
he's in the NFL, I guess.
In a game.
He's in a game. Yeah, he's random, but I would say him.
What was the last song you sang along to?
I love this song and I think it's really great for Women Crush Wednesday. There's a song by Drake called Nice for What, and it's like a woman's empowerment anthem, if you can have that from Drake, but
You can. And also like Issa Rae is in it, in the video.
Yes, Issa Rae is in the video. It's like all of these women who just kind of like made it on their own. Oh, yeah. I love.
Good one.
What is your favorite food place in, are you in New York?
I am. Yep.
Okay. For a second, I was like, yeah, you're in New York. Okay. What's your favorite food place in New York? I love New York, by the way.
Oh, yes. You guys got to come visit. Favorite restaurant in New York. There's just so many great ones here. Honestly, I don't even know if that's why we live in New York, is because you can just have anything at any time. And it's, I honestly could not answer that for you. There's just so many great places.
Right now. What's your favorite place right now?
What's your go-to spot to order?
What's your mood?
There's a really great Mediterranean place close by called Miss Ada that I really love. I like Greek Mediterranean food a lot. So I would say there is really great.
Yum. Okay. Awesome. Also, if you haven't tried Hip City Veg yet.
Ooh.
From there, it's a Philly place. It's fast, casual, vegan food.
Ooh.
Have the best sweet potato fries, and they have really good vegan milkshakes that you're like, this is vegan.
Yeah. It's,
yeah. Go there.
Okay.
I want to end the conversation of food on, is the pizza in New York like hype up, or is actually like the best pizza?
Dang. To be honest with you, I don't eat a ton of pizza, but what I will say is apparently Hartford, Connecticut is the best pizza in the country.
Like Mystic Pizza is near there too.
Exactly. Okay. So I would actually say Connecticut. I've heard Connecticut, New York, and then like the Midwestern style pizzas, which I cannot do.
No,
it's like too much bread, too much cheese, too much. Yeah. But no, the pizza is phenomenal here, but it's thin crust, cheesy, if you're into that.
Love that. Okay. And then I actually have a really quick this or that section that I made. So this is going to be fun. And Laura, you can answer these too, because I feel like it's more fun when we have more voices. Okay. Pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes.
Waffles.
Waffles are so dry.
Waffles are so dry.
Like what the syrup is for.
With like honey and stuff. Anyways.
No. So I'm team pancakes also. Okay, sweating in 98 degree heat or freezing in the winter?
Sweating in 90 degree heat.
Sweating.
Oh, yeah. Freezing.
I hate the cold.
Oh,
my God. See, I hate it too, but at least I can put more layers on.
Yeah, I do hate sweating too. Both of those sound like pretty miserable.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, Reels or TikTok?
TikTok.
I'm going to say Reels. TikTok sometimes, it's too much for me. Same. Like Reels are pretty.
Love. But I will say, so I just got on TikTok like 2 weeks ago and I was like, whoa, no wonder the kids are obsessed with it, because literally I was like, I've learned how to like steam my like dresses in the dryer. I've learned how to like clean my house in 2 seconds, how to make this meal, where to go. And I was like, oh, it's like all of the information you could ever want in one. And it's also, you have to like curate it specifically to make sure that you get the good content, because there's a lot out there. But if once you have your algorithm right, it is, I don't know what they
do. Algorithm is so important. Yeah. I like, sometimes when I see something I don't like, I literally freak out and I just go faster, because I'm like, no, I don't want to see anything.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, 90s music or 2000s music?
2000s, easily.
90s?
I feel like I'm a 90s kid, so.
Yeah.
I'm a 90s kid too, but I feel like the 2000s were like.
That's true. I mean, that's because like, especially for like pop and like. Also like, can Nelly come back?
Right.
Yeah, I feel like the 2000s is like pop, is what I think.
That's true.
It was like, that was when all of the boy bands were at their peak. Britney was at her peak. Mulan Rouge. Oh my gosh. That was like such a moment.
That's true. All
right. I'm trying to convince y'all to come to my side.
Yes, I hear you. I hear you. But like, I see, and that's why I think I like the early 2000s, because it's like
that's what I'm talking about.
That like 90s vibe, and like up to like 2004, 2005.
Yeah. I would give it like 2006, like 1999 to like 2006 was great.
Yes. Yeah. All right. The last question: East Coast or West Coast?
Ooh.
Oh. I mean, I know I don't even have to ask, but like.
I am such an East Coast girl. I don't, not a West Coast girl at all. I think the West Coast is beautiful for a weekend, but I love like that New York, DC, Philly, even like Miami. I don't know, Miami's technically on the East Coast, but it's 2-hour flight. So I'm going to say yes-ish, like that, like whole corridor, Atlanta, all of that. Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I lived in LA for 2 years and came back. So
my heart split in two. I think I can very much survive in the East Coast. I think my personality is more East Coast. I'm like, fast go, let's go. Or more like New York, I would say. Yeah. But I still love California. So it's hard.
Split. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is all the time we have today. But thank you so much, Jody, for joining us on this inaugural episode. We are so honored to have you. And it was just such a great conversation. And thank you for creating space for women like us. And, you know, just this whole company is just better for having you on board. So we really appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you both so much. As an inaugural episode, you guys did phenomenal as well. So pat yourself on the back.
Papa, you were our first guest. You made us. I feel so, at first I was nervous. I'm not going to lie. I'm staying raw here, but you made it so, I don't know, the space was just very comfortable. So I'm like, okay, let's just, you know, just be yourself and just have these great conversations that I know a lot of people would really, really appreciate. And that's the whole point of this podcast, to reach as many women and men nationwide in Compass. So I'm so excited. I think this was a success and I'm really happy this was our first episode.
Awesome. I feel so great about it. You guys did awesome as well.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Women Chat Wednesday. We'd like to thank our guests and our team here at Compass for all their hard work to help make this happen. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes released each month.